Petersfield's Shine Radio.
Hello and welcome to Dogs with Jobs. I'm Kate Fairweather and I have the most wonderful interview for you today because there's a huge amount of information and new information, to me at least, which I hope you'll find really fascinating. We're in Orkney and we're talking about stoat detection. The dog that we're meeting is a beautiful English Springer Spaniel called Skye, and she's one of 10 dogs up there in Orkney working as part of the Orkney Wildlife Project, which is a big strategic project in terms of conservation and in terms of Scotland. And we get some brilliant high-level strategic views from my interviewee, Chantelle Carr, who's really strong on both the day-to-day mechanics of working a dog in an environment that has its own challenges, just geographically speaking. Perhaps, first of all, if you think of stoats, as I do, as a kind of vaguely sweet, sort of sinuous, rodent-y, ferret-y type of thing, think again. Here's Chantelle on stoats and why they're a problem.
And the Orkney vole is endemic here, and when they found caches, which are storage areas where the stoats are storing food, sometimes they found up to 100 voles, Orkney voles, in one store. And that's just one stoat with one cache. So it's indirectly affecting bird species, but also directly affecting the Orkney vole.
So really, when you think about these extraordinary colonies of seabirds, many of them nesting underground and therefore particularly vulnerable, it's fascinating. And thanks to the RSPB for getting in touch. Chantelle, tell us about your dog first.
So I have a English Springer Spaniel. She's part of quite a big team. We have 10 detection dogs here in Orkney. She is a little baby. She's 3 years old. She arrived in Orkney in September 2022 and she had to do a fair bit of training. A lot of that training is getting her used to the environment here. We can't really replicate the environment down south where she was from, especially with the wind, when sometimes we get 100 mile an hour winds up here. So she went through some training when she first arrived and she became operational in around April, May 2023. I started the project in August 2023 and we became bonded and became the duo that we are in September last year. So she's been trained to detect stoat scat, and she's been trained to do that by imprinting on the odour of the scat.
And what's her name?
Her name is Skye.
Skye. So quite a Scottish name, actually, yeah. Considering you are
the wrong island where you for are. It.
Yes, but it still has a Scottish flavour to those of us that are kind of, you know, southerners. Oh, amazing. So how are things between you and Skye? Tell me about when you first got together. You say you were bonded. What does that mean?
Skye is housed by me. She does live with me. She lives with my personal dog. She interacts with my life outside of work as well. Although she is a workaholic, so she never stops working. So even a generic walk at the weekend is work for her. The first few weeks, it's pairing up the right handler with the right dog as well. So I got a bit of time to spend some time with Skye before I housed her, going out on searches, and we sort of both had a little induction together to see how well we'd match.
So does that mean that, you know, you could have taken to another dog and another dog could have taken to you, and you know, it was a question of chemistry right from the beginning?
It can be like that. So at the moment we have new dogs that have just started the project. We've doubled the team. We've got 4 new handlers and we also have 5 new dogs as well. So they've all started very much at the same time. So they're all going through the process at the moment of finding which dog is most suited to their training techniques and how they are in the field and that sort of behaviour of that dog as well, how that's suited. Me and Skye do get on very, very well. It takes a little while to have that bond because there's so much to learn in this project. And these guys are the first dogs in Europe to be stoat detection dogs. So there is a huge amount to learn. So it takes a little bit of time to develop that bond. But very much now when I'm out on a search, I'm so confident in how she is and I'm confident in I'm noticing the changes in her behaviour. And I'm very confident in her response to me. She's very much responding now to body movements, I don't really need to say anything verbal. She will follow whichever way I'm sort of walking. And it just builds up a lot of confidence when you're out searching that you're not missing very much.
And before we get into the mechanics, because I'm quite interested in the how and whether you're using lines and, you know, how you're searching. But just tell me briefly how you came to it, because you've taken me aback with the size of the project. That's quite a lot of you, isn't it? Tell me about the project, because, like I say, I know that stoats are carnivores, but why are they such a problem in Orkney and presumably other islands around in that area of Scotland?
Yeah, so the project I'm on is called the Orkney Native Wildlife Project. It began in 2019. Stoats were first seen on the island back in 2010. And since the project begun in 2019, there's been over 6,000 stoats that have been removed just from Orkney mainland and the Linked Isles. This is the largest project of its kind anywhere in the world, having Europe's first stoat detection dogs, and it's the largest eradication of stoats on an inhabited island. So we're a team of about 35 of us all together. That includes dog handlers, trappers, also vital members of the team, such as our communications officer, and we have a community side to the project as well. So it's quite a huge project. Dogs have been used since 2022. They weren't used at the beginning of the project because there were stoats absolutely everywhere and signs could be spotted without dogs. But now dogs are being used and they're a lot more vital, and they can actually help trappers now to target what we call stoat hotspots. So they're defined by looking at the ideal habitat, the amount of food available, and the signs of stoats as well.
Let's just reel back a second. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the stoats. You've just rather shocked me with the idea of 6,000 plus stoats being removed. I had no idea, and I'm sure that lots of people just wouldn't know that. How did they arrive? Are they native or are they invasive? And tell us about the stoats and why they're a problem and what makes them difficult to keep down. And indeed, are you looking to keep them down or are you looking to eradicate? How's that all working? The kind of big picture, if you will.
Yeah. So stoats are a type of mustelid. So they're cousins of ferrets and weasels. They're quite small. They're only about 30 to 32 centimetres. They're extremely successful predators because they're not only skilled hunters, they adapt with what they're eating, they're long distance movers, and they're absolutely prolific breeders. They are invasive to Orkney. They are native to mainland Orkney, but they are invasive to the island. And the wildlife in Orkney has not an experienced mammalian predator to this extent before, and they've not been able to adapt to it. So the stoat presence on Orkney has been having a real negative consequence on the wildlife. And I know invasive predators have been responsible for 60% of island extinctions worldwide. And Orkney is very,
wow,
very
in terms
well
of
known.
Birds.
Yeah, in terms of
in
birds.
In terms of birds.
Yeah, so Orkney is very well known for its natural history, for its wildlife, and the impact it's having. For example, hen harriers, which are one of UK's rarest birds of prey species. The stoats indirectly affect those by eating and predating on their favourite food, which is the Orkney vole. And the Orkney vole is endemic here. And when they found caches, which are storage areas where the stoats are storing food, sometimes they found up to 100 voles, Orkney voles, in one store. So it does show you how much they are actually eating.
God.
And that's just one stoat with one cache. So it's indirectly affecting bird species, but also directly affecting the Orkney vole. And then also they predate,
because it's having an impact on the food chain.
Yeah, and they also predate on lots of eggs, and that's including seabird, waders, divers. So that's affecting curlews, Arctic terns, red-throated divers, a huge array of why Orkney is well known and why people come from all over the world to see the wildlife that we have. We have things like puffins as well. So it's having a huge detrimental effect to the wildlife, but also to the tourism industry too.
So what is the dog's role within the rest of the conservation efforts on Orkney? I'm assuming that they're searching actively, where you'll have a number of passive measures, I'm guessing. and traps and...
Yeah, so the dogs are just one little element and one little part of how we're eradicating on the project. So the way that we are looking for stoats, a lot of it comes from public sightings. So we're just getting into that period now where tourists are coming to the island, they've been informed about stoats here, and we do start getting a lot of public sightings come through. So we do rely on that quite a lot. We also have a huge, extensive trap network already existing, and this was prior to the dogs arriving on the island. We have over 8,000 traps across the whole of the island. So we do rely on a network. We do targeted shooting and things as well. And we're looking at sort of those hotspot areas. So the dogs just play quite a small part on the whole eradication project.
Okay, and it sounds as though stoats are very social and you have what you're calling hotspots, but they're kind of living almost in communities rather than evenly spread right across the territory.
Yeah, so we're looking for certain areas. For example, when I go out with Skye, she is absolutely incredible when she's out searching. Because she will go and pinpoint and target sort of the hotspot areas out on a search. So that will be things like mossy mounds, the burns.
Burns being streams?
Yeah. When the vegetation has changed from being heather to grass, she will sort of go along and have a look at along the vegetation change. She will look at fence lines, any rocky areas. So these are usually the areas where the stoats might stop, and that might be because they are feeding, or it might be that they're stopping to have a little look around. And stoats generally want to find the easiest access through an area and through habitat, which we have extensive okay. moorland here. So they are looking for the easiest routes to go. And Skye has learned very, very quickly to pinpoint those areas out on searches. But the thing is with stoats here is, as much as you can learn and read in a book their ecology and their behaviour, it seems like it changes quite often when they are invading into islands. So we're learning new things about the stoats pretty much every day.
And it sounds as though they're super clever and rather kind of bionic predators in the sense that if they're that smart... I mean, we were talking rats in a recent episode, and of course intelligence and, I don't know, brilliant talent for spreading, combined with the ability to adapt to one's environment, I'm guessing make these a pretty fearsome problem.
Definitely, and it's when we're going to get down to the last few stoats that the dogs are really going to play a part, because we're going to be trying to target the ones that have been trap shy this whole time, and they might have actually passed that on to their young as well. So we're dealing with the difficult few when we get to the end. So the dogs are going to be really important then. And that's when we'll look at bringing in not just a detection dog, we'll also bring in tracker dogs so they can actually track the live stoats as well. Because at the moment, the detection dogs are just searching for the stoat scat.
Can you extrapolate from that likely numbers simply from the incidence of scat? Is that part of what you're doing?
No, the looking at kind of more in depth into the behaviour of the stoats is we do actually have someone on the project that extrapolates teeth and other vital data that gets sent away for examination to learn a little bit more about the stoat behaviour. For us as dog handlers, we're just trying to provide as much information as we can for the trap team to move their traps to set the network or set some new traps out. So information that we might pass on is if there has been any indications near holes as well, because that could be a potential den. Sometimes we get more information that if there is a huge amounts of scat in one area, that could potentially show that there's a den nearby. So we do get some information like that, but that's usually done when we have the amazing Carol does the postmortems on the stoats. That's how we get more of that information there, looking at their age and their sex.
And so if you're the biggest project in Europe looking at stoats, I'm assuming that, I mean, I come at this always from the working dog perspective, but actually you're playing a part in a much bigger project, which presumably is learning an awful lot more about stoats, how they breed, how they spread, maybe how they migrate.
Yeah, we do have a huge connection as well with a team in New Zealand, because stoats over in New Zealand have had dramatic effect on their native wildlife, and they've lost a lot of native wildlife due to stoats. So we do have a nice connection with them, and we're always sharing ideas and new methodologies that we can trial all the time. And that's the real exciting thing about working here, is trying to push to think, right, okay, we've caught that stoat. What can we do to try and catch two next time? So we try and use different things. We try and use like anal gland lure. We're trialing that to see if that's encouraging ones that are usually trap shy to come in and things like that. So it's really exciting to be part of something where the methodology is always changing. And that's exactly the same for the side of things with dogs as well, because we are the first dogs in an RSPB project as well. We are sort of setting standards and setting the protocols for the future of dog handlers in the RSPB, which is quite exciting too.
That sounds wildly exciting. And I guess that's possible because it's such a big stoat problem. So you've got the numbers to start getting meaningful data.
Yeah, and also the project takes part in a lot of monitoring as well. They monitor bird and vole populations at over 100 sites across Orkney to understand how wildlife's getting on and if there's any signs of recovery. And since 2022, vole numbers have actually doubled. And hen harrier chicks have also seen a massive increase and nearly tripled since the project began. And when you go out and about and talk to landowners, we have over 900 landowners here. And a big part of the project is also getting the landowners to support us. And it's really nice when you get to talk to the landowners and they tell you stories of what wildlife was like before the stoats and since the project's begun, that they're starting to see things in their land a little bit more wildlife. So it's really, really rewarding.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds amazing, because when you're in quite a big project, you can't always see the top-down view at the same time as your bit of it, but it sounds must be very satisfying. What's your background? Do you come to this from conservation, or how did you get into this?
I'm a nice mixture of both. I used to work for a charity called Frog Life, so I used to work in conservation on the sides of looking after nature reserves. And then also I did a lot with pet dog training. So I used to be a canine behaviourist. So I've never worked, this is my first job working with actual working dogs. So it's been really exciting.
What differences do you notice then coming from a pet behaviouralist background? It must be interesting professionally for you.
Very, because usually it's the humans are the ones that need to listen and don't listen. Whereas the dogs are just so excited to go and they just want to work and they want to do whatever they can for their reward. So I'm in awe every single day of Skye, and when we do something new and I do a new little bit of training with her, she just gets it so, so quickly and excels in her training.
So what is it about Skye that makes her great at her job? And can you point to any particular highlights so far, you know, when you've really thought that was awesome, Skye?
I think it's her resilience. She's a very resilient dog. So we sometimes in the winter, we also take part in biosecurity island checks. And that's to go to islands that are currently stoat free. And it's just to ensure that that stoat free status is so we're not at risk of any stoats incursions on islands at all. So they're quite hard days for the dogs when these dogs are used to finding stoat scat on a regular basis. They're used to that regular reward. It can be quite toiling for them doing these biosecurity island checks when they're not getting rewards and they're not getting any fines. I usually will put out fines myself out on the island to help keep her drive going. But she's such a resilient dog that if she's not getting a fine, rather than losing her drive, she actually, it increases. She just can't wait to keep going and get that fine. And anytime I've taught her something new, she just gets it within just a couple of training sessions. So I think my highlights with Skye are definitely the cliff searches.
Describe that.
Yeah, we do a mixture of online and offline searches, but we do have to search the coastline because that's where often stoats are predating on the seabird eggs. There's over 500 miles of coastline around Orkney, and some of the cliffs are sort of 200 feet high. So we do need to search that online. But they are my favourite because just being, you can imagine the landscape and the scenery, just being absolutely surrounded by the waves, the beautiful dramatic cliffs. Sometimes you might get eagles fly over. It's just incredible for wildlife. We do get sightings of lots of marine wildlife as well. But for me, it's feeling, because I have to work Skye online, I feel more connected to her, and I feel we are a real team when I can actually feel her movements on the end of the line. It's quite powerful. It's more tiring than offline searches, because I've got many things that I have to concentrate on. One, the fact that we're at the edge of a cliff. Two, that I have to make sure that I don't want to put too much pressure on the lead, because if she's caught the scent of something and I've put pressure on the lead, she will come towards me and not follow the scent. So I have to be very, very cautious of giving her enough lead that she can go and follow the scent, but not too much that I'm still directing the search.
Why are you keeping her online on the cliff searches? Is that partly safety, or
safety?
It keeping in sight line?
Safety, usually the stoke signs when you are working on the cliffs are pretty much the very edge of the cliff. She will have her nose fully over the edge of the cliff, and because she is so concentrated on finding scent, you do just have to, it's just an extra element of safety, making sure that they're online.
Now, you said earlier that things have changed because you've been working with her for a while now, and that you're now seeing different signs, or maybe it's your relationship maturing, I'm guessing. How have things changed over time with perhaps how she indicates or how you two communicate?
I think it's confidence. It's confidence for me as a handler, that the training sessions that I'm doing with her, the conditioning training, the search development, that we're going down the right line and I'm seeing improvements from the way she's working. It's confidence for me as a handler as well, that we are searching efficiently, as most efficiently as we can, because you're only relying on your search at that time. It's not, although as we have other dogs doing the same search after us, because we've got to cover such a huge area of Orkney, we have to be just sure and confident in our dog that they are searching efficiently and not missing too much scat. So it's building that confidence and building her confidence with me too. That, for example, if she ran past a stone wall and not searched the wall, that she's got the confidence in me, if I direct her to that stone wall, that she'll come back and actually search that wall. That she's got the confidence thinking, I'm independent, I can do this, I know what I'm looking for. But also, okay, handler, you do know sometimes, I'll come and search that for you. So we just work a little bit more as a team. So now I don't need to do anything verbal with her. She's always looking at the corner of her eye where I'm walking. So I just sort of need to sway with my hand for her to come back and search.
And is she? Have you had other dogs prior to Skye, or is she your first search dog, detection dog?
She's my first detection dog. I've not had any.
Okay. So you have, because sometimes when you speak to a handler, someone who came on the podcast a while ago who was actually a police handler, he said the curse of the handler is the my last dog. My last dog used to do this, my last dog did this, and that your new dog never works the same as your old dog. So you're kind of, I guess it's like having a second child if you've got children. You expect it to be the same and then it's not.
I think that's the same in the dog world with pets though as well. People get the same breed after losing their pet, hoping it would show similar traits.
How amazing. It sounds an incredible project, both professionally and also you're not alone, are you? You're part of a great big team, like really quite a big team. I mean, 30 plus people is a lot of people to be working with, going in the same direction.
And just working on a conservation project where people have come from such different backgrounds as well, we've always got something to learn from each other. And it's just a fantastic group of people that have always got really interesting things to say.
Okay, so how do the next few years look? Because I think you said stoats were first seen in 2010.
Yes, they were, yeah.
You've had dogs since, did you say 2019?
2019 project began, 2022 is when the dogs were introduced.
Okay, so it's only been 2 years with the dogs. Where are you in the grand scheme of things?
Well, we're just monitoring at the moment. So we're just looking at trends from the previous years, because we haven't got a huge amount of data to go on. We've only got since 2019. Yep. It's just,
so you're almost benchmarking.
Yeah. So we're just looking at the patterns from last year and the previous years to see if things have quietened down with our catch rate. We're just looking compared to the sightings that we're getting in. Are we still catching relatively large amounts, or has the catch rate gone down? So we're just looking and monitoring that at the moment. The weather has been very different from what it was last year. So we are a little bit behind due to the weather in terms of seeing many stoats. So fingers crossed, it's also because our efforts have been huge and we're getting to the point where we're getting to be really successful at catching. So we hope it's that versus that we're just delayed because of the weather's been a bit different this year.
So on the question of weather, you briefly mentioned wind earlier. Now, I'm imagining it's quite windy. Tell me about how the wind affects Sky and your work.
Yeah, that's the only one thing I would change about Orkney is the wind. It's relentless sometimes, which does impact the dogs. There are days where we can't go out and search, but it's days that you could still go out and do a trap route. So sometimes the handlers might work on training their dogs, or sometimes the handlers might go out and be a trapper for a day as well. It affects the dogs because they can't pick up. It makes them have to work a lot harder to get that scent picture, because right. The wind will be directing that scent in very different ways and will be pushing that scent away from the dogs. So it's a lot harder for them to work. So usually around 45 miles an hour is our limit for the dogs actually going out and working. And then if we're on the edges of cliffs, we do have to be very, very wary about that as well. So usually 35 miles an hour is our limitation to working on cliff edges. But the winds can get over 100 miles an hour here.
What are you hoping for over the next few years, you know, as hopefully the stoat population goes down and down and down? How will that change the nature of the work you're doing? I think you alluded to it earlier, but at the moment you're working on scat.
Yeah, it's going to be more difficult for the dogs as time goes on, because it's very similar to the biosecurity island checks. That the more stoats we're catching, which is fantastic, the less the dogs are actually going to be out finding. So it's just making sure us as handlers are aware of that and making sure that it doesn't affect the dog's drive to keep searching, because those last few stoats are going to be the most difficult to search. So the plans yes. that we are developing at the moment is also looking at the future and looking at the monitoring and the biosecurity when we officially go stoat free. So we're also looking at doing freight and cargo checks as well. So this is early doors for this. And at the moment, what we are doing is just building up good relationships with the freight companies and also training the dogs on freight and cargo. Because at the moment, they're trained to search large, wide open areas and they are more ground searchers. Whereas with cargo and freight, they're going to have to be lifted up. They're going to have to be put onto things. It's going to be very noisy. It's going to be very distracting. So we're just early doors with taking them into the ferry ports and doing little bits of training with them. And then the final thing is looking at our tracking dog. So we have one tracking dog here at the moment, and she's just in the process of being trained. So she will actually be out looking for live stoats. We had a previous dog, our first dog to ever retire on the project. His name is Spud. He was a black Labrador. He lives with his handler still. She has adopted him. But he was quite a unique dog. He was a bit of a hybrid, so he was here to be a detection dog, but he kind of taught himself how to track when he was out and about as well. So we're learning a lot from him too that will help us in the development of the new tracking dog.
Wow, I love that. I love the idea that Spud is helping with intel and driving maybe, you know, how you approach things in the future. Sounds a really exciting project. Now, what have we not talked about that I should have asked you? Any general observations? Because it's such an interesting situation you're in with a lot of canine colleagues and handler colleagues on a project that has a beginning, a middle and hopefully an end game.
Yeah, I think maybe just sort of like our typical day, working day with Sky. So usually she has her breakfast and that takes up quite a lot of time because she needs a lot of supplements in her food. And that's to aid.
Why?
So that's to aid her recovery after she searched. It helps her to absorb key nutrients. So these dogs are working extremely hard. They work up to 4 or 5 hours each day in really difficult terrain. So that we're asking a lot of these dogs. So it's just ensuring that we're also doing the best by them by offering them supplements. They are used as a preventative as well when they get older, that they try and live the most happy retirement life, that they don't have too many issues with their joints. So then what we do is, after she's had a breakfast and she's resting a little bit, I sit down and plan our search area. And our search area really depends on the information that the trappers want. And then I do a little warm up with Skye just to make sure all of her joints are all ready to go and all her muscles are ready. And then we complete our search and then we return for Skye's lovely afternoon snack and nap, just so she has time to recover. And then she also has a bit of a wash and a groom as well. And then days that we're not searching, we might do a little bit of training, and that might be to help her search development, or that might just be a bit of fun for her to make sure she's still got her drive and intensity.
Okay. And I'm assuming that she probably sees a physio at times and that kind of thing. Do you generally keep an eye on that, or is that part of the grooming and the general looking after at the end of the day, that you're keeping an eye on her general health and joints and all the rest of it?
Yeah, so I think this is one of the more challenging things as being a dog handler, is our role often feels more than just handling, because we are having to do training with the dogs. Quite often we sometimes have to be a vet when we are looking at if they are having any issues. Sometimes, yeah, we might have to look at, well, can we do a little bit of physio on them, looking at their nutrition and their diet. There's lots of elements to a working dog that the handler is probably the best person to ask all these questions to, because they get to know the dog and they know the dog really, really well. So it can be a challenge sometimes trying to learn all that information to make sure you're doing the best by the dog. So Skye is, she can swim, but she's not the most confident swimmer. She stands pretty much completely upright and doggy paddles. So I've actually taken her to hydrotherapy. So she actually has had swimming lessons. And that's just because if she ever gets herself into any trouble, she exerts her energy out in the first few minutes. So it's just helping her to aid. So she has had a few swimming lessons, which that helps with her joints and stuff as well. So we do have the option to do things like hydro and physio as well.
Amazing. And how long do you think you'll keep working, Skye?
So usually Springer Spaniels, you look at maybe getting a retirement plan in place when they're about 7 or 8 years old. And it's just very, very much on each individual and each individual dog as well. So we just make sure we set that plan way in advance, because it might be that we need to transition slowly. They might not just directly stop that day, just transition in that a little bit slowly for them.
Okay, one last question, which is, given that there are quite a lot of you, is there teamwork? Do you go out in a group? Do you work effectively independently but in parallel with the other dogs? How does that work? Is there teamwork involved? Or?
Yeah, so Orkney isn't small and remote as everyone thinks it is. It's a huge island, and it can be daunting sometimes when you arrive and you look around and think there are stoats, well, hopefully not running everywhere anymore, but when you look around and think, oh wow, we've got to search the whole of Orkney, it can be a bit overwhelming. So we have two teams in the dog handlers, and we cover different areas. So my team covers the Western Isles and the northern part, and the other team covers East Mainland and the Linked Isles. But sometimes we have days where we've got a huge moorland that we might need to search, so we can actually search that as a team. So we might all go out on the same day and start at different areas and help each other out. And sometimes we do that with the trappers as well. Some places we can't access unless we've got a 4x4. So we try and make sure that we do them on the days the trappers are going out and doing their trap routes. So we might simultaneously do a search while a trapper's doing their route. And they're really fun days as well, because it helps the trappers to know how the dogs are working, but also helps us to know what the trappers are looking for, so then we can develop our searches for that.
And I guess also sometimes the best ideas come from unexpected places, don't they? So the more you know about your colleagues.
Definitely.
Chantal, it sounds an absolutely fantastically interesting project. Perhaps we can have a chat another year or so down the road and see how things are developing. Because it's one of the things I think is very interesting about your work, is that you're part of a project, as we say, with a beginning, middle and end, hopefully.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. It seems like we're definitely making movement. The fact that we've got Over 6,000 stoats caught now on the island in just a few years is absolutely incredible. So thank you for the opportunity to talk wildlife and dogs.
Many thanks to Chantelle Carr for talking to me, and I found her so articulate on the big picture, but also, as so often with people that work their dogs, that relationship with Sky came through, which I found gorgeous. So I'm not quite sure what I'm bringing you in a couple of weeks' time. I love to hear about dogs doing interesting jobs, and I will put how to get in touch in the show notes. I'll also on the website put more photographs and information and how to find out more about the Orkney Wildlife Project and about conservation work in Scotland and other places using detection dogs. Until next time, thanks for joining me. Dogs with Jobs, presented by Kate Fairweather and produced with John Wellsman.
Songs that shine forever.
I'm so in love with you.
Oh, no, no. And the brightest tunes of today. Great music and local information. Only from Petersfield's Shine Radio.